All right, that got me fired up. I really don't even want to talk to you guys right now. I want to go out and shoot some fish. I was thinking about that, and I was thinking, what can I send these people that isn't super graphics? I'm like, I'm not going to send them deer or all those other things, because what if people don't like hunting? And I'm watching that, and we're like whacking on those carp with bats. So anyways, if I offended any of you, I'm really sorry, but that's what I love to do. That's one of my passions. My name is Jason Amato, and like Pete said, I got my wife Christy, my little girl Skylar, who came up here. And Blaze, and I got a little bad news for you. Last night, Robbie asked you guys to have that time of silence, and you know, it got real quiet in here. He said, hopefully you'll hear something from the Lord, and maybe some of you were like, oh, I'm hearing something. It's like this loud, like, squealing, screeching little girl's voice noise. That was Skylar, so that wasn't God, so sorry to break that to you guys, but it was her. All right, you know, when Pete called me and asked me to come and speak, first I was like, do you know who you're asking to come speak? And secondly, it was interesting how he asked it. He said, I'm like, what are we talking about? Are we talking about the fruits of the Spirit? About this? He's like, well, we're going to tell stories, and we kind of need, you know, somebody that's kind of, you know, had a lot of lows and failed at things. I'm like, oh, okay. That's go ahead. I'm going to check that to my resume. That's great. I'm Jason Amato, known for failure. I said, sure, that sounds simple enough. But anyways, really excited to be here with you guys. Thinking back to just the times with Pete, and I'd love to just spend time with you guys over the next day and a half, and where this ministry has came from. I remember the days when it could be anywhere from 20 people till we grew to almost 100. A lot of times it was Pete by himself. I was joking around with Pete yesterday. I said, you don't do anything anymore. Like, you have all these people working for you. He's like, yes, I'm Moses. That's what I do. All my people. So I got to get back into campus ministry. I'm actually adding to my list. I thought I knew what my calling was, and I really missed it by a long shot. But really happy to be here with you guys. And so I'm just going to be real with you guys, be vulnerable. Is that cool? We all about vulnerability? You know, I've learned over the years, I'm 36 now, I don't remember a lot of sermons. I don't remember a lot of messages. I remember a lot of times sitting on a couch, hearing a story. I do a lot of traveling, and stories of what have really impacted my life. And it's interesting, you look at the life of Jesus, how did he teach people? With stories. He came and he lived with us. And so I hope in this morning and this evening that I'll be able to just share my life with you. I'm gonna go over kind of turning points, as Robbie would call them, some highs and some really lows, and just kind of share some takeaways. So I'm going to have highs and lows. We're going to be able to look at what those highs were, what those lows were. And then on the lows, we're going to look at how maybe not even 20, maybe 20 years later was when there was a redemptive takeaway where I said, no, God redeemed that. Didn't look like it. There's some things that I'm still working through. And highs, it's funny, some of our highs, you look at it actually caused some worse things than actual positives. So we're going to go through those. We're going to go through four this morning that are going to kind of take you through my life through college. And then this evening, we're going to go post-college on. Is that cool? Okay. So the first picture you see here, that's me, and that is Montana, one of the most beautiful places I've ever been. People that were with me had been to Alaska. I haven't. They said Alaska is one of the most beautiful places other than that. So this is day four of a five-day hunt, and yes, I got binoculars, and I'm looking for something, and just like you guys, I'm not seeing anything other than mountains and meadows, and we have been going up and down and trying to track these bears. We were on a spot and stalk with a bow and arrow, and so I'm sitting at this range here looking out, pretty frustrated, and it hit me. You kind of have those moments where kind of just God speaks to you in his own way. And it wasn't an audible voice, but it was pretty clear. It was like, I was looking at what life represents. It's mountains and it's meadows. Call it highs, call it lows. But I was looking at mountains and meadows, and I just started to think through my life. And I want you guys to be thinking, just like you were stimulated last night to go out and think. And throughout this day, as you reflect and you go in your journals, you are going to face many mountains and you're going to face many meadows. And there's positives and negatives to both. You know, I looked at these mountains that were in my, and if we even saw a bear, it was 3 miles away going to feed in the meadow, and that meant that mountain we were going to have to hike up, trek up for hours to even get within range to possibly get a shot off. And then there was the meadows where it was like, talking to the guide, I'm like, can we just take a nap there? That looks awesome. But we learn something in each way, in each one of those. In the meadows, it's very comfortable. It's like our comfort zones. But at the same time, what happens with comfort zones? If you stay too long in the comfort zones, you become relaxed and you don't push yourself at all. And on the mountains, even though they're hard, when we get to the mountaintop, we get to see views that we never would have seen from the meadows. And so as I go through the story of my life, you're going to see those mountains and you're going to see those meadows. And maybe something will resonate with you. I feel like, just probably like Robbie does and anybody else would speak to you on this, the poster child of throughout my life just going in so many different directions. And it's fascinating. Even standing with Pete yesterday and hearing Robbie talk, and I'm like, my goodness, looking back on this, there's so many clues of what I was called to do. Looking back on it, there were so many times when I was in a low area when I was like, you idiot, just look at what God is trying to tell you here. And in those highs, don't get so high about that. Yeah, God's telling you something here. And it's like a map that just all leads to what I'm basically called to do today that we're going to go over. So I want you to have an open mind with that. Also, before we dive into it, there's something that I'm a very passionate person. I get really excited. This is a quote by Theodore Roosevelt, and it's just part of the quote. This is in my office on a bigger level with like a gladiator. I am all about being in the arena. And Theodore Roosevelt goes into this whole quote that said, it is not the critic who counts. So picture somebody just standing in the arena of life. They're off, sitting in the bystand. They're sitting in the bleachers. It's not that person. Not the man who points out how the strong man stumbles or where the doer of deeds could have done them better. The credit belongs to the man who is actually in the arena, whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood. Guys, that's my prayer for my family. That's my prayer for my church. That's my prayer for my life. And that'd be my prayer for you guys. That throughout this weekend, as you're thinking about your highs and lows in life, get in the game. Stay in the arena. It's okay to fall flat on your face. Robbie shared some of his stuff. I'm going to share a bunch of mine. I want to be in the game. I'd much rather end my life one day and look back and say, you know what? I fell down a lot of times, but my kids and my wife and my neighbors and my family, they knew that I was in the arena. I was not going to go down without a fight. And it's in that fight that we see God orchestrating what our calling truly is. See, he's got it already all figured out. He knows how we're going to make it in the arena. We just got to look at all the clues. So this is a really good quote for me to get me started. So we're going to start off with number one. That's not me, by the way. I tried to like do like a silkscreen shirt with Christy to try to get her excited. Be like, remember, this is me. No, so this is my personal low. So we're going to start when I was young. And why do we have a picture of a chest? That was interesting, actually, pulling it up on the internet. Chest pictures. You got to be careful with those. So this is a personal low. So growing up, I think little kids, kind of like my kids, Blaze and Skylar, we grew up kind of with like a picture of how God views us. And just everything's all right. Everybody looks the same. Everybody loves each other. No one's different. There's no flaws. No one's picked on. It's just pretty, it's lovey-dovey all the time. And then we start to hit junior high. And we start to, grow physically, mentally, emotionally. We start to see that we're not all the same. We're not all wired the same. We're not all popular. We're not all jocks. We're not all this. And what became really clear to me was I had this big problem with my chest. My ribs and my actual sternum kept growing farther and farther into my body. And so most people wouldn't know. I was fairly good at sports, I'd say. So captain of teams, playing every single sport under the sun, traveling teams, doing that, working out all the time. But there was this terrible feeling every time summer hit. There was this terrible feeling every time go to a locker room. There was this feeling of, I don't want to take my shirt off because I look different than these other guys. And so throughout my childhood, what looked so shiny and rosy on the outside was complete shame and misery on the inside. I was completely embarrassed everywhere that I went when I knew that I was going to have to take my shirt off for that period of time. And so fast forward, we get to high school. And me and my parents, we met with doctors and said, you know, what can we do about this? And it kept growing more and more. And not to get in the old doctor terms, your ribs, like, they're actually like when you eat ribs at like a rib place.
They're these individual ribs inside of your actual rib cage that they fully harden when you're about 21. He said, well, yeah, you could do something about this if it keeps getting worse, could affect the breathing, whatever, if you want to play sports in college, this and that. I don't know, it might not do anything. So I opted to have a surgery. They completely snapped my sternum, flipped it over, ripped out the ribs that were bad. It's crazy. In like 2 weeks, everything was all back to normal. And I thought, well, this is going to solve everything. Not only am I going to be able to not be short of breath, on top of it, I'm not going to have this big indention in my chest. Well, then what I realized one day as I woke up, I didn't have an indention, I had a scar. And so the scar replaced the indention of embarrassment. And so this is my first low. So what kind of effects? We're going to go over three effects, both high, and during the highs and lows this morning. Effect number one, create a massive shame. I was just shameful. There's something flawed about me. God, you know, I know you're God. I grew up in a church. So I think hopefully you guys, some of you guys that sometimes sit in some of these talks and are like, well, you know, I come from a good family. I kind of got it all together. I was that guy. I grew up in like a Brady Bunch family. My parents loved me, Bible verses every day telling me how great I was. So it wasn't like I was out in left field on those certain things, but I felt so much shame. Number two, robbed me of my joy. Man, looking back, there was just so many times where I missed out. I call it a kid. I guess you're not a kid in junior high, but I just wasn't having any fun because I was always dreading what was next. Oh, great. Got to take my shirt off. People are going to notice I'm different. And joy, which now I have this unspeakable joy in my life over the years through Christ. But what areas in your life are just being robbed of joy due to shame? And I think a lot of us have shame, and maybe it doesn't manifest itself in a scar or an indention in the chest. Maybe it's not a physical thing. Maybe it's an emotional or mental thing, or it's an incident that happened. But there's a shame from that that robs us of our joy. It held me back. You know what's really one of the most disgusting things about shame? We miss out on some things that really hold us back. Basketball. Baseball was my best sport, but I was fairly decent at basketball. And there were so many times where you do like shirts and skins, and I'm like, I don't want to do this. I don't want to do this. How do I manipulate to sit on the bench or do something like that? Totally shortchanged myself in basketball. Not say that, I mean, I know I look like I'm 7 feet tall, so I should have played pro. But missed out on a lot of opportunities early on in high school to play basketball because of that. Same thing with swimming. I was certified as like a lifeguard at like 12 years old, which is the stupidest thing in the world. No one would hire you. Thinking about what we did back in the day, they tied a brick around my ankle and made me jump in my jeans and a flannel and make a life jacket out of my jeans. I don't know if they teach that anymore. And then they're like, well, you're 12 years old, so no one's going to hire you anyways. I'm like, okay, that's good. But it held me back. I missed out on so many things because I was chasing after what I thought my identity was in the way I looked, and I put so much value in that. I missed out on a lot of things. Now there's redemptive takeaways. And these redemptive takeaways, this is what's great about Jesus. See, Jesus comes to redeem. And so as you guys are going through this weekend and you're thinking of these stories, you're thinking about these turning points, some of it you will not figure out this weekend. Some of it may be revealed to you later on, but it's really cool years later to see these redemptive takeaways. So what were they? I have three for each one. First one. Experience God's love for me. Psalms 139 says, you are fearfully and wonderfully made. And that was a very, very freeing feeling. When I find it, because you can say it, right? We can say all the time, well, yeah, I know the Bible. I know Jesus loves me. Do you believe it? Do you truly believe that Jesus loves you? The creator of the entire universe. Do you believe that? Because I know how my son feels when he knows that I love him. Feels like he can take on the world, and I want him to. I want him to tackle a grizzly bear. I'm get excited about it. But do you believe the God of the universe loves you? This is a picture of the amphitheater in Ephesus. And this is cool. This ties right back into what Pete was talking about. We used to meet in our apartment, me and John Peacock, who was here, last year, and some other guys, and Pete totally changed my life. You talk about a turning point. He taught us how to really read Scripture. It was basically, you got it all up here, guys. You come from suburbia. Your parents are all in ministry, this and that. But what's going on here? We really dived into God's word. We went through the book of Ephesians. And the overarching theme of Ephesians, he told us, was, Ephesus was this place of image. It's this place of smooth talkers, education, gymnasiums full of these men and women that were like the gladiator types. And so if you were an actual citizen of Ephesus, you would walk outside each day and you would be like, I am not Arnold Schwarzenegger. I'm not Albert Einstein. But I got to do it. I got to do it. I got to do it. And to make matters worse, there's a mountainside. And what they would do is they would take babies that were flawed, they'd pin their ankles together, and they would throw them on the side of the hill. Just think about that. Think about Skylar over there, my little girl. She's being pinned and thrown on a hill. So now you're a Christian in those days, and you're sitting thinking to yourself, should I go to work today because I'm really not that big guy or that most attractive girl? I'm not the most skilled. And you hear the wailing of children that are flawed. And see, what it taught me, and that was, Pete was just speaking into something he didn't even realize, is that Jesus came, he lived, he died, and he rose again, and he lives today for the flawed babies of Ephesus, just like me and you. Because I'm that flawed baby. And you guys, in some way, shape, or form, are too. You're the rejected in some way. And you're being thrown out by society from what society would say. And Jesus is like, that's who I came for. I didn't come for the people in the amphitheater. They think they got it all together. I came for the little babies that are on the mountainside that were flawed. That took years for me to realize that. But looking back, that was a reflective takeaway. My superhero power is my scars. What do I mean by that? This has been really powerful in my life. And granted, I'm 36, just been tapping into this probably my late 20s, early 30s. God's put me on a pretty crazy journey. I've been through a lot of junk over the years, with starting businesses, having things we'll go over this afternoon. But you know what I've come to appreciate is that this thing that used to cause shame, it's not my superhero, Mark. It's my scars. So I did Superman, you can call it a scar thing. That's the best thing I could find. But what are your scars? You know what I'm realizing? Our scars have way more power than any one of our trophies. Your biggest triumphs will never, ever create greater impact and influence than your greatest scars. Hands down. And it's about time that the church starts reaching into their bag of scars and starts redeeming them for their power. Because you know what? Jason Amato, growing up in suburban world with his white picket fence where everything's together, we play sports, we get all these trophies, ooh, we go meet girls, all this is great, we get our good grades. That doesn't change anything in our world. Everything that I was running for as a kid, no one cares. That's not bringing people to Jesus. But you sit down with somebody and you share a scar, watch their ears perk up. Watch their posture. So that's my scar. And I'm proud of it now. And now when I go through something and just add it to the list, how God's going to use that. And now that's my calling card as opposed to my shame. Number three, it's a constant reminder for humility. So with all that said, I had a lot of inward shame. I had a lot of outward cockiness and confidence growing up as a kid. And I'll never forget one of my buddies. He was like smaller, looked just like David Spade. So I was like the Chris Farley, but I wasn't heavy set. And I could never say anything right because like English is like my fourth language. I'm always stuttering on words. And I don't know Spanish either. So I'm just not good with language, period. But I remember him saying one day, he's like, you know what? I'm glad you have that scar because it's something that keeps you humble. And I'm like, screw you. I don't like you. Go away. And he's like kicking him. He's down. He's not that short. He was a little taller. But anyways, it helped me stay humble. And so looking at how over time something that I thought was such a mountain kept me humble and it protected me from my own flesh. Because my flesh still gets in the way a lot in many different areas. And it was always that, oh, you think you're so, ooh, wait a second. We're not We're not all together. We are flawed. We got some issues. And so it kept me humble. It also kept away the Pharisee in me. You know, it's amazing how we read Scripture and we're so quick to be, these disciples, these Pharisees. Well, I think a lot of us, if we're not careful, we're those same Pharisees. And so when we actually look back and we tap into our scars, it brings it down a little bit. Kind of evens the playing field. Makes you appreciate what you have. And it makes you appreciate what Jesus did for you. So those are the three takeaways from the first one. Each one of them, I have a question for you. And you got tons of probably way better questions in your journal and stuff. I'm just going to pose questions at each one of these stories. What scars need to be redeemed and used for good? Really passionate. I'm going to say I'm really passionate about everything. Pete's right. I'm really passionate about this. What scars, guys, need to be redeemed? Something to think about. All right, number two. We know that guy. He just came out with another movie. That's not me. It's really tough to look at Ben Stiller and not laugh. Like, I think he has an unfair advantage in that way. Like, he just is that look where you just start laughing. You don't even know what he's doing. So this is social high. So let's fast forward a little bit. So that was Jason, early years. Now let's move on. I go to ISU. So I enroll in school. I'm in Manchester. Anybody in Manchester dorm? Okay, still standing. Okay, perfect. I thought I might have burned it down. So I went there for my freshman year and was going to school. I had some injuries in sports. I thought I was going to go play college baseball. Ended up fracturing my spine. Had mono. I missed like 2 years of ball and realized professional sports. Check that off the list. That's not going to be what I end up doing. So I enroll at ISU, and I have a roommate, actually John, who spoke, his older brother, who's exact opposite of him, which means he's really exact opposite of me. And he was Mr. Student, everything to the book. He knew what he was going to do with his life. He knew who he was going to marry. I had to build a curtain. I had to build a curtain just so he could study because I was like, I can't study. This is going to drive me nuts. I wasn't the best student, so they didn't ask me to talk on that. So I got Justin over here. Knows what he's going to do, he's got his career figured out. Then I started meeting all these people in the dorms, right? Freshman year, so on my floor, we go eat. We always went to Watterson because I had better food, and that was the first time I had Chick-fil-A with the horrible pickle that's right on that thing that like kind of like, I don't know if it molds into the bread or what it does, but Chick-fil-A has made improvements. So we got that going on. Then I think, oh, I got all these new friends. This is going to be great. Well, then what happens? All my friends start going and they're rushing different sororities and, or not sororities, yeah, for sororities. Fraternities. I like those friends too. They were rushed. Is my wife gone? Oh, she's still here. Shoot. So got all these guys that are rushing different houses, and that wasn't my thing. If you're into that, great. So all of a sudden I was like, whoa, wait a second. We were hanging out. I thought we were buddies. We're gonna hang out that much? No, I got my brothers and this is what I do. I'm like, okay. And for the first time, I realized I didn't have, like, my sports team because that's what I was used to. I was used to always having just the guys, and I knew I wasn't going to play college sports. So what was I going to do? Well, it was at that same time, right before I had graduated, I was dating a girl, and her dad her uncle was a big-time model down in Texas. And he was like, oh, you should get pictures taken. And I was like, whatever, you know, people from Bloomingdale and suburbia don't model and this and that. And he's like, take some pictures. My girlfriend took pictures. Sends them out, and all of a sudden I start getting these calls, and these different modeling agencies are calling, saying, hey, we want you to come in and do auditions. I'm like, great, because I don't really like school. So let me just go to Chicago and do that. And then I got my parents that are saying, son, we don't quit here in the Amato household, so you got to finish your year, and then you can do what you want to do. So I kind of had my mind halfway out of school, and so I'm going back and forth to the city. And so I'm thinking, oh, this is what I'm going to be doing. Fast forward that. The next thing you know, I finish my freshman year, and actually I don't finish my freshman year. So some of my buddies that joined a fraternity, they end up having this fashion show. And I'm like, well, I'm not a part of a fraternity system, but they're like, hey, we need to win to get some points. I guess you guys got point systems if you're in the Greek system. So I'm like, okay, I like competitions. Are we going to compete on stage? What are we going to do? They're like, no, you walk around with clothes and this and that. I ended up winning that, and it was cool. I was able to talk, and my grandma came down and share some things about my dad. And for me, it felt really good. All of a sudden, I'm like, hey, well, maybe this is what I'm supposed to do. Not sports. Don't really know about the ministry thing yet. Maybe I'm supposed to be in like the entertainment business and walk around on runways and do that kind of stuff. And so that was a real high for me. Some of the effects. Let's see when we're on these mountains. Validation. So I was like, okay, God, this is what you have for me. Maybe I know the whole scene may be a little bit dirty, but maybe this is how I'm going to get influence for your kingdom. Sometimes we like to call that, oh yeah, this is what I've been called to do. It feels great, and on top of it, there's a way to make some pretty easy money just walking around and smiling or doing Zoolander poses. Okay, that sounds good. So there was validation. There was acceptance. I wanted to be accepted. So it felt good to have everybody at ISU that went to that thing start talking and saying, oh, Jason, you're great. You won this. God, it feels great. Family, friends, other people calling in and saying, oh, that's really cool. What are you going to do? And so for me, there was a lot of acceptance and a lot of validation. Thirdly, purpose. Purpose is huge for us. I think it's a guy and a girl thing, but speaking from a guy, like not knowing my purpose all these years, if I don't have a purpose, I just feel so lost. I feel so scared. I'm just like grabbing things like falling down a mountain, basically. There's no grip if I don't have purpose. And so this all of a sudden gave me something to focus on, something to dedicate my life to, and said, okay, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to go do that. Now, with that said, it's interesting on the highs. What were my formational takeaways? Well, for one, I felt alive, like I was saying. Now I got this purpose. I'm feeling something inside of me. And, you know, Robbie was hinting at, like, we need to look at our stories. So as you're thinking for yourself, what makes you feel alive? I felt alive. I felt people laughing, having fun, you know, giving high fives. I was like, okay, this kind of feels good, feeling like I have some influence. Made me feel alive. What makes you feel alive? It created this fire inside. For me, I don't live in a lukewarm world, and it's a really bad thing to be a politician. That's why I'd never be one. I speak my mind. A lot of times that's not the best thing, but I get really, really excited about things, and there was this fire that started to build up. I'm like, okay, I got purpose. I got an excitement. Okay, I'm feeling something here. This is what I'm probably called to do with my life. And thirdly, the third formational takeaway is the negative, is there was a false identity that was created. All of a sudden it was, yep, this is Jason Amato. This is what I've been called to do with my life. And I ran as hard as I could down the entertainment aisle, and I dropped out of school. All right, the question. See, this just was the best one I could find. This shows excitement. Thinking of experiences that excited you, what was it about these experiences that were so life-giving? So be thinking about that today during your reflection time. What excited you? What got you fired up? See, these are just clues. I obviously didn't end up being anything near a model or anything like that long term, but there was clues along the way that God had for me that I wasn't completely seeing at the time. So start formulating that. Third, my aspirational low. Okay, so there's a sign of Hollywood. So here's what happened. Dropped out of school after my freshman year. So for all you people like, oh, I might, you know, I don't know. Can God redeem my story? I've been out of school. I think that this isn't a call to drop out of school. I got to be careful with that. But I did, and I was gone for 2 years before I ended up coming back. It's okay. So I was on the six-year plan. But it's not the end of the world. God uses people to take 6 years to get through school just as much as people to get through in three. So I found myself, I went to New York. Traveling this trail of, okay, this is what it's got to be, God. Go to New York. Had some success there. Hated it. So here's the clues. How are we tweaking this? Okay, I kind of like the money. I like the lifestyle per se, but I'm not a city guy. I don't like being standing around skyscrapers, having to go out every night to try to make everybody happy and be told that I got to look a certain way and do this. There were some things I liked about it. So there was clues. Wasn't for me. So I ended up meeting a manager out there that I found out. I said, well, maybe God What else? Let me look for clues. What signs? What else? And it found out that everybody who was doing the modeling wanted to be an actor. So I'm like, well, then why doesn't somebody just get smart and not be a model and go straight into acting then? And so I'm like, that's simple. So I'll go out to LA. So I end up moving out to Los Angeles with a friend named Brian. And Brian's going to come into the story here in a second. Brian was a stud athlete. He ended up, he had a golf scholarship to Texas. And he was in middle, he was taking a year off of school. We went out there. He went out to model. I went out to act. So I'm in LA. I'm living the dream. I'm going out there. You know, you have your own people picking your clothes out for you. I got into physical fitness really big out there. I'd always been big into fitness, but they set you up with trainers. So now I'm on Sunset Boulevard. That was when Baywatch was big. Remember Baywatch Day? Anybody was around then? Okay. David Hasselhoff? Okay. Backstreet Boys, all that. Carmen Electra was important or popular back then. Like, that was the whole craze. So they had me working out at this gym with all these people. And so you're sitting there working out, and it's the most ridiculous thing. You're working out, and I'm used to like watching Sports Center or something like, you know, heavy metal or something to pump me up, and it's like soap operas. I'm like, I walked up to the front desk. I'm like, why is there soap operas on? He's like, well, because all our people are from soap operas, so they want to see themselves. I'm like, well, I'm not on a soap opera. I don't want to see any of them. I want to get in shape. And so I'm doing that. I got a trainer. I'm getting involved in all this. We're doing well. And me and Brian had conversations. He was not a believer. And every Sunday, I'd quickly ask him if he wanted to go to church. He'd say no. I'd be like, that's cool. And we'd go our separate ways. And at that point, that was really about it. We didn't get really much more into the whole God thing. We just did our thing. We're there for about 6 months. Things are starting to really pick up, getting ready to go on some big auditions. End up on the side winning a national competition for Crunch Gyms when they were real big. And they said, okay, you know, you just won this. You're going to get a call from the president. And I'll never forget the day. I'm driving down Sunset Boulevard, very famous, popular road. Maybe 19 years old. And car just blows up. Front of my car, boom, just goes. Pull over, everything's smoking. I have no clue what to do. I'm sitting on the side of the road. I was supposed to get to my first really big audition. No one to talk to. I don't have any friends other than my buddy Brian. Well, he was on a vacation. He went with some of his friends to Vegas for the week. My phone rings. Person's crying on the other line. And it's one of my buddies, and he's like, Brian's in critical condition. He just got in a jet ski accident in Lake Mead. He lacerated his liver. They don't know if he's going to live. Like, okay, this day got worse. And so I'm sitting there, and then I get a call from the president of the gym saying, yeah, we're flying you to South Beach to do these fitness competitions, all this. And I'm like, you know, whatever. Ends up, looks like Brian's going to be okay. 2 days later, I'm able to find a new vehicle, and I'm like, God, you got this. This is where I'm called to be. I'll never forget, I'm driving to the beach to get dinner, and I'm just going to take myself out and celebrate because I had a vehicle. I was all alone out there. And the phone rings, and there's tears on the phone, and says, we lost him. Brian's dead. And I remember in that instant just pulling over and just feeling a low that I have never felt before. And it was really hard for me emotionally. I was all alone out there. This was my one friend. It was also the first time that I come face to face with the reality that someone I knew and cared for deeply had no idea about Jesus Christ. And I don't know if you've ever experienced that, but that was the first time for middle-class, suburbia, Brady Bunch, Jason Amato. Worst feeling in the world. And so I was at an absolute low. Not to mention, the acting union went on strike that same week, meaning that jobs ceased to exist. So if you're new in the business, you got no shot. My parents said, hey, why don't you come home, regroup? It's too expensive out there. What are you going to do? And I find myself getting basically in the car and driving across the entire country to come home. So what are the effects? What were the lows? One was the death of a friend. It was brutal, guys. Brutal, not just from a friendship standpoint, but just from a standpoint of a spiritual state, just really, really hard. And we all have certain things that we've lost, Maybe we've lost friends or family. There's nothing fun about death. Death of a dream. Not as bad, but pretty devastating for me. Spent, 20 hours in a car or more just thinking, what in the world am I going to do? I dropped out of school. I don't have any backup plan. God, I'm not going to be a professional athlete. I thought maybe it was modeling. It wasn't that. Now I thought it was acting and then maybe these fitness competitions, but everything is just blown up all around me, and now I'm driving clear across the country to go back to Chicago to do what? It's horrible. And then finally, dealing with the uncertain future. Uncertainty is really hard. I've learned to embrace uncertainty over time, but I'd be willing to bet you guys sitting in those seats in college, I know where I was at when I was your age, a lot of uncertainty. Who am I going to marry? What am I going to do? All these different questions and uncertainty. Was dealing with a lot. Kind of just all came together at once and really was in a very, very low time in my life. So, where do we find redemptive takeaways in that? First, the importance of living with intentionality and urgency. Huge. I got the little, I don't even know what they call the little card things that you get at a funeral. I have that still to this day. And it's a reminder that life is short and the stakes are way too high. The stakes are way, way, way too high for us not to be intentional and live with a sense of urgency. You know what makes me sick? What makes me sick is every Saturday morning, me and him would argue over Texas versus Michigan football, and we'd get in like a leather strap match over it and wrestle. I would go to the death about Michigan sports versus Texas sports. But, you want to go to church? Nah, cool, see ya. Why? Because I had no sense of urgency in my life. I had great intentions, but there was nothing intentional about it. God really needed to teach me that. And I live with intensity and urgency to a whole different degree because of that. Now, that may mean I'm perfect at it, but it's a constant reminder. Guys, we're not promised a tomorrow. One of our good friends at our church back home, their son, 21 years old, was working for Sony, got his dream job. They just told me he has 2 weeks to live. So they're going on a trip with a Make-A-Wish type thing to Hawaii. You just don't know. So that was the first thing I learned. Second, I needed to redirect and reallocate my talents and passions towards a higher purpose. You see, God isn't sitting up there saying, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to create Jason Amato to be passionate, to be fiery, to be excited about life. I'm going to create him to be around people. I'm going to create him to have certain skill sets and certain passions. But you know what? Once he becomes a Christian, he wants to follow me, I'm going to make sure that he sacrifices all that just to be a Christian. He lays that all at the foot of the cross and just goes and, you know, puts ash and sackcloth on him, which is sometimes what we hear in churches. Sacrifice everything that excites you. Sacrifice everything that God wired inside you. Fearfully and wonderfully made, not just physically, but the way you've been gifted. And we're told we're supposed to throw it all out, or we get that feeling that we're supposed to, because maybe culture says, well, you know, you got to get to reality. One day you got to wake up. Jason, you're just a dreamer. Well, clues, guys. The entertainment thing was giving a clue that, you know what, maybe you have some skill sets, but what? So you can have your picture on the front of a magazine? So you can walk down a runway and see if a piece of clothing fits right? Act just to act? No, nothing wrong. I got friends that are in Hollywood. They're acted. They're using their influence. That's your thing. But we're going to find out in a second. It was a lot of my skill set and talents, but it wasn't my passion. And see, when you combine those two, which we're going to get into, that's when the explosion begins. Third, I went back to school. So I came home and I enrolled in a local community college, and then I eventually ended up at ISU. Why was that big? Well, let's talk about ISU. I remember going to college, and I get there thinking, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? I don't know. And then I end up seeing a guy sitting outside a campus house. Like, that guy's kind of weird. And next thing you know, he ends up becoming my mentor, Pete Coco, and teaches me, like we talked about in that Bible study and other things, how to read God's word, how to live from a place of relationship and not religion. I met my best friend, other than John, who you've met, named Greg Helly. He's a linebacker here, a godly man, mover and shaker in the world, in a place when I just came and I'm like, I don't have any friends right now. I don't know what to do. And we became like brothers. He followed me, moved into my home after college. My wife kicked him out when we got married, and still a little bummed out about that. She's a little bit far. So I met that, and then Encounter. You know, when I went my freshman year, I didn't really click with some of the other ministries, and nothing against that. People are probably involved, and Robbie's involved in all of them, so they're all good. But with that, I didn't really click, and it was really great to find a home at Encounter, to find a place that I could start using some of my giftings and some things that I really wasn't gifted, but Pete wanted to just delegate for me to do, like worship leading. I'm like, I've never even sung a song before. Just do it. But I found a home and a spiritual community and Encounter. And so that was huge. Looking back, I see how God redeemed that horrible mess, and he used it for his good and to further his kingdom. It also took me away from, I wasn't strong enough in my own flesh at that point. I had no business being in Hollywood. I had certain strengths and certain things, but my walk with Christ, and this is just me, would have started to erode, and I would have walked down the road of mediocrity. I don't want to live on that road. And so those are the things that I learned over that experience. Question: think of a dream of yours that died. Any clues and or takeaways pointing to a better calling? What's died that you've just given up on? You're like, that just is brutal. I don't want to get into that. It's old news. What if there's a clue or a takeaway in there that you were close? You were close in that, but it wasn't the best. Think about that. Okay, number four, my passion discovered. Remember we talked about talents and abilities, and then we got passion? When the two of those connect, watch out. So this is where we found passion. So, before I came back to ISU, I was just going to a local community college. A business guy in the area took me and John Peacock aside. He said, you guys think you're so cool because you're athletes and you play baseball. We're like, yeah. Is there anything else? He's like, have you ever shot a bow and arrow? I'm like, isn't that for like cowboys and Indians? And that was before you could say that and be politically correct and all that stuff. And probably used other words like Tonto or other things. And he's like, you guys have no clue what you're talking about. Go with me. Gets his bows. We go out to his farm. What a blessing. This guy uses his giftings. Takes two young guys that have no clue what they're doing with their lives. And I'll never forget. So I get taught up in the archery, and he puts me in this platform stand like 7 feet. I'd never hunt like this. This is, you know, 15, 20 years ago nowadays. And I'm in the dark, and I'm like, this is dumb. I thought this was like G.I. Joe's. This is nothing like G.I. Joe's. I'm standing here. I do like G.I. Joe's. I can't wait till Blaze gets old enough I can play them again. I'm holding a bow, and I'm sitting here thinking, my arm's going to fall off, and it's cold. And then something happened. The sun came up, and all the creation arose and sung his praises in the process. It's the most fascinating thing, guys. I challenge you. You could go sleep outside tonight. But when squirrels and birds come alive, it really is. All of creation comes to life in that moment. And I'm like, man, yes, this is great. I used to work, side story back to why this was so important. I had a zoo in my basement. Animals everywhere, iguanas and snakes in my room, ferrets running around biting your feet, all that stuff. I was like, I'm getting to see animals. I'm getting to see God's create. This is way more me than an office. And now I got a bow and I can be competitive and this is exciting. And then this little buck comes walking by, a smaller buck. I end up shooting him, put a great humane shot. He died immediately. Sorry for you. We got through that quickly. And I felt an adrenaline rush. I'm like, this is better. I haven't even done drugs, but this has to be better than drugs. Has to be. And I felt an adrenaline. I couldn't stop shaking. I'll never forget my buddy that taught us. He walks up, big guy, did gold gloves of boxing. said, "You've never felt anything like that, have you?" I'm like, "No, what was that? How do I bottle that up and drink that regularly?" And he's like, "It'll eventually be a drink called Monster, but we haven't come out with it yet." And it was in that point that I saw what I was really passionate about, the way I was fired up. So what were the effects? I experienced the all-time high. Start thinking, guys, is there anything that you're like, when I'm doing this, there is nothing I would rather do? For me, it was this. I probably shouldn't put really, that sounds cocky. I was fairly good at it. And not from just the shooting, but like understanding the woods and animals and the G.I. Joe stuff, because I played G.I. Joe so much. It just came natural. It was just like, I just feel like I know what to do. I know where to put tree stands up. This is just like my sweet spot. It was like my wheelhouse. And so all my abilities and talents sort of started making sense of my passion. And we're going to find out when it was fully here and came together this afternoon or this evening. But I was pretty good at it. Another thing is it became a way of life. Be thinking about it. If there's things that really fire you up, you couldn't think about living without it, without doing it, and it becomes a part of you, you might be onto something here. That's all I thought of doing. That's all I wanted to do was I wanted to be in the outdoors. So my formational takeaways. God wants to give us the desires of our hearts. Now, especially for you people that have been churched for a long time, really let that sink in. It's more profound than you think. Because I read that most of my life and said, yeah, not really. You know, he might want me to be a monk. He might want me to just do whatever and make my money for my family and then do what I love the rest of the time. Which is what the work world tells you. Don't like what you do during the day and then come home and make enough money that you can do what you really want to do. It's all over. Drives me nuts. But what if God really wanted to give you the desires of your heart? Now, I preface that with the desires of your heart, it has to be something when your desires are combined with his desires. So it's not, well, I just want to be a professional golfer. I just want to cut hair, I want to do this, whatever it is you want to do. But when your desires are God's desires, he's going to want to combine your abilities, talents, and passions with that. I discovered my spiritual pathway. I don't know if you guys have ever done that, where there's like, I don't know if it's 7, 11 of them, but I know what mine is, so I don't even care about the other ones anymore. But there's different pathways they go over that we connect with God. For some, it's music. I know that one. Mine, it's the outdoors. I come alive when I am with my Creator. I don't see God like some of you do that are architects or other minds when I see buildings. I see Him when I see trees, when I see sunsets, when I sit in Montana and see a color scheme that no artist could even paint on the side of a mountain. It makes me feel alive and feel close with my Creator. I found my spiritual pathway. So I'm like, all right, we're on to something here. I'm also connecting with God, because if it's just vocation versus ministry, I'm going to tell you guys, hopefully you're hearing in my talk this morning, this evening, it's not. It can be together. It should be together. God wired you in a way where you're going to further his kingdom and be able to provide for your family and do other things. I don't know if it's being a plumber. I don't know if it's being in the trades, a businessman, a businesswoman, whatever it may be, a teacher. He's going to use that to further his kingdom. I must pass it on. So why do I have that in print? Because the company I own, Takedown Outdoors, the hunting videos and stuff we do, our mantra is passion, perspective, pass it on. I don't want to build anything that doesn't create momentum. And I believe that all of us are called to pass on our passions. I don't care if you're passionate about golf, architecture, whatever it is. Passion is intoxicating. I love being around passionate people. We're drawn to them, right? So whatever you're passionate about, pass it on to other people. I tell people that, you know, if you don't have kids, go take the neighbor's kids, show them how to hit a golf ball, show them how to do whatever you are, do a drawing, whatever it is. God wired you that way. But he didn't wire us just to have it all bottled up and, you know, Jason, just go do your thing. Pass it on to others. So if you're looking back at one of your turning points during the day and reflecting and saying, wow, this fires me up, gets me excited, and I can really pass this on to other people, you might be on to something and be excited about that. Question, what makes you come alive and fills you with unspeakable joy? It's not a bad thing. Well, the song says unspeakable joy. And that doesn't have to just be about a Savior that died on the cross. That's one of those. But it could also be an unspeakable joy when you truly are doing what God called you to do or how he wired you to be. So be reflecting on that. This is going to be the end. I'll actually leave this one up. So this is how I'm going to end this morning. We're going to come back this evening. I'm going to go post-college on. And so hopefully just take some of my stories and maybe it just helps get you started, get you to think, okay, yeah, I had some shame in this. I had some scars here. And hopefully it's just something just to get you going. And I think Robbie's going to come up and tell us what to do next.